So it is Wednesday, June 22nd at 5:25 p.m. and we're in Frankfort, Kentucky. Mandy Higgins is conducting the interview. So if you could start by stating and spelling your name.
My name is Allison Lyle. It's A-L-L-I-S-O-N-L-I-L-E.
Awesome. When did you begin to sew or craft?
When my daughter was in second grade, she was involved in the Bluegrass Theater Guild here in Frankfort. And the children's productions were run by my old music teacher. So when I showed up as a parent, she said, "You are assigned to this." And it was making costumes for that. So that's when I learned how to sew quickly. My mom knew, and it was one of those things kind of like teaching your child how to drive. It's better for somebody else to do it. And so I hadn't learned before that, really, on the sewing machine.
How old is your daughter now?
She's 20. So that would have been 13 years ago. Okay. Yeah. Or she's almost 20. No, she's 21. I forgot. 14 years ago.
So you were self-taught, or did you take lessons?
Just self-taught, yeah. Yeah, just lots of YouTube videos and Googling.
What did you start making after you learned to sew the costumes?
Pretty much stayed with costumes because I was just involved with the theater. Even when my daughter wasn't in a production, I was usually involved with it. If someone says they theater sew locally, that means you can look at it from 10 feet away and it looks good. But if you get closer, it might not look so good. So I personally have never made clothing or anything like that. I've made a quilt. I've made that sort of thing. But my daughter has far surpassed me. She makes her own clothes and it's like super complicated stuff. So, yeah.
And did she start working with you when she was in second grade, or is this something she picked up later?
Probably middle school. Yeah, by middle school she started doing that, yeah.
Did you do any of that in groups? Can you talk a little bit about sort of your process of making these costumes? And?
Well, in our house, we have a sewing room, and it looks like what I think of like old school architects. Our tables are put together facing each other, and then we have our sewing machines on each table. So that's what our sewing room looks like. And so even if we're not working on the same project, we were often sewing together in the same room, just on different things. She's goes to school in Boston now, so she's far away. but when she's home, yeah, that sort of thing. But the costume, she would help me on costumes for the theater stuff. But a lot of it wasn't like super complicated, because for theater we often would take things that already existed and just modify stuff. So it wasn't like a huge labor process.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved in any sort of sewing groups or other craft groups before the pandemic?
No, I was not. I was trying to think. I'm like, no, I wasn't. We had people in our church who do knitting, that sort of thing, and I kind of would have liked to have been in that kind of thing to learn from them, because she makes amazing things. And that's one thing I cannot figure out by watching YouTube videos. But I never had the opportunity to do that. No.
Shifting a little bit.
Okay.
How did you learn about COVID?
Oh, well, at the time I worked for the Cabinet for Health and Family Services. I'm trying to think of when I first heard about it. I'm sure I heard about it on the news. I'm a big podcast person. I listen to podcasts all day, all week while I work. And so I'm sure I heard about it there. But I had just come back from a trip right before they sent us home. And I actually was sick right before they sent us home. I definitely did not have COVID. Mm-hmm. I just had a respiratory, whatever, yearly allergy thing. Mm-hmm. So I just came in to get my laptop and went home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you take me back to that getting sent home day? Do you remember when it was? Do you remember how you were feeling?
It was the second week of March, I believe, and of 2020. And I was excited. because I'm not necessarily a people person. If I could stay in my home all day, I probably would. So I wasn't worried. I'm a very critical thinker. What I do for a living is work in healthcare data. So I understand what the numbers mean when I see them. I dig deeper and look at like what are the sources, and so I wasn't worried. I've never been worried throughout the whole process. I'm more about stay educated and do your overlapping mitigations to prevent yourself from getting COVID, that sort of thing. So I never really was worried. I was more, actually what worried me the most was my daughter was a freshman in college in Boston, and her school kept saying they weren't going to close, they weren't going to close. Then they said they were going to close and everybody needs to be gone in 5 days. Well, I couldn't drive up there and get her and bring all of her stuff back. So that was actually the most stressful part of the whole thing, was figuring out where she's going to store her stuff and flying her home. So, but then when she got home, it was kind of lovely for her to be there and doing classes online. And then I got to keep her for extra a long time, which was really nice.
Do you remember any of the early mitigation or like panic things? Do you remember doing anything like washing your groceries or?
I did not wash my groceries. I definitely stayed home. I had been doing click lists before that because I don't like the grocery store.
Same.
So that was something I was already used to doing and already doing. And I mean, mainly I just didn't go into anywhere. And if I had to go somewhere, I wore my mask. But I mean, for months and months and months, I didn't go into anywhere. And I was fine with that. It didn't stress me out. I was fine just to be home, do my click list. My daughter and I and our two dogs, we were cool. But I mean, mostly I just tried to pay attention to the smart people, the people who know way more about this than I do, the epidemiologists, and obviously the people at the cabinet that I worked for at the time were the smart people, so I just trusted what they told us.
Do you remember when you began to make masks?
It was April. It was the next month. I don't remember exactly when, but they were talking about, obviously, that the medical masks were in short supply. We needed to leave those for the professionals. And I think someone maybe even asked me because they knew I sewed. And so someone else, I think, sent me a video. And it was a lady in Lexington had posted a video on YouTube. And she was making masks, I think, for nurses. And she kind of gave out her whole process. And it was super simple. And so we just started doing that. My daughter and I actually did it together in the beginning when she was still there. And so April is when I started. Yeah.
And so you learned from a YouTube video.
Yeah.
And did you keep that same pattern?
Yes. I am very much, so my background is I have a math degree. I'm very, let's do the most efficient thing. And so, yeah, I kept the same. I adjusted the ear straps, the links, because I don't know how big people's faces are, and kind of adapted some of those things. But the premise of the actual mask that covers your face, I was the same from the beginning.
How did you source your supplies?
So in the beginning, when stores, I don't think the stores stayed closed like completely from the beginning. Maybe there was a few weeks, and we already had material. But also, I think I probably posted on Facebook, and I have a friend who had a mother who had passed a while back who was, she was a sewing hoarder. Loved the woman. Loved that she was a sewing hoarder. And so this person gifted us quite a bit of fabric. And so we used that. But then also Joann's. I'm so thankful we have a Joann's in Frankfort. A lot of small towns have no source of that sort of thing. And you could do it online and just drive up and pick it up, and they'd bring it out to you. So those ladies got to know us really well.
Yeah. Did your masks have filters or backing? Can you describe a little bit more of the, like, type of mask?
Yeah. So we made the folding masks. Mm-hmm. I knew it would take me way too much time to cut out the patterns for the fitted masks, and that would just mean I couldn't make as many as I wanted to make. So we made three layers. And the front layer was 100% cotton. The middle layer, if I was making them for somebody, I gave them the option. It could either be flannel or it could be another layer of cotton. And then the face layer could also, they could choose from flannel or another layer of just quilting cotton. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, from there we just sewed them like normal.
Did you use elastic or what were you doing for the ear bands?
So at first, what did we use elastic at the very beginning? I think we did, but then it got hard to get elastic of the right kind. And so we actually found this. A lot of people were talking about you could use t-shirts, but I wasn't going to just use something I already had. I didn't think that was hygienic. But my daughter had figured out there was this material that's kind of like those t-shirts that you get when you run 5Ks that are kind of slick, but you buy the material. And if you cut that in strips and then pull it, then it becomes kind of like that. So we did use that for probably 3 months, but then we were able to get the elastic. So bought many, many, many hundreds of yards of elastic from Joann's and Amazon and wherever we could get it.
Who are you making masks for?
In the beginning, it was for friends and family, people that just, you know, on Facebook who said they needed it. I did decide, I didn't charge anybody for those, but then I decided as a single mom with a kid in college, I probably needed to cover my costs at least. So my daughter already had an Etsy store, so we started selling them on Etsy. And so probably half of the ones that we made, we sold on Etsy, and probably half were just local, either giving away. I don't know if people probably gave me money for about 25% of the ones that were from local. Some people just insist on it and whatever. But neighbors, I know for Halloween that first year, I dropped off little, because I knew the kids couldn't trick or treat. So I dropped off little packages of candy at the few houses on our street that had kids with masks for the parents and the kids. I'm not sure they even knew who put them there. But yeah, even there were some people that were like, oh, so-and-so really wants one. I'd give them my address. They'd do a porch pickup. Mm-hmm. So many random people came to my house and did porch pickups for masks. And then I mailed a bunch for Etsy.
Do you have an idea of how many masks you made in total?
I have this at home somewhere. It was at least 2,000. I'm not sure if I went over 2,000, but it was at least 2,000.
Can you tell me a little bit about sort of the feelings as you were making them? What was it like? What were you feeling?
So it definitely made me feel useful, which I really, really appreciated, because otherwise I did not feel useful at all. And I was one of those lucky people who could sit at home and do my job and got paid my full salary and benefits and everything. So I definitely wanted to feel useful. It was a little bit stressful because I would work till, 5 o'clock every day and then immediately go to the sewing room. And so till 10 or 11 o'clock at night, almost every night. And every once in a while we would take a break on the weekend, but I was easily sewing, 3 to 5 hours every day to do this. With my daughter, she was sewing too. So a little bit stressful, but mostly useful. And because I'm a big podcast and audiobook and all that sort of thing, I had stories going on in my head the whole time. And at one point I was listening to the book Women of Troublesome Creek. Is that, did I say that right? Yeah. And of course that's about women in Kentucky and the librarians who went out into the mountains to deliver books. And I was just like, I know I'm not anywhere near what they're doing, but I feel like this connection to these characters a little tiny bit, like nowhere close, but like a tiny bit, because they were doing, good work and all that stuff. And they were from Kentucky. So I thought that was neat.
Yeah. What about your daughter? Do you have any insight into how she was feeling or?
She's a lot like me. Critical thinker type thing. I don't recall. She was stressed while she was in school, about getting home. And of course, there's all, you know, there's rumors when you're at school. And she had heard that Logan Airport was going to be shut down. I'm like, Logan Airport's not going to be shut down. And she had to, of course, I'm stressed about the fact that she wasted so much stuff because she had to throw away so much stuff in her dorm room because she had nowhere to put it. Mm-hmm. And I hate being wasteful. But then when she got home, she enjoyed the sewing. She still had to do class, but she could do actually some of the sewing while I was at work if we like had somebody who wanted to pick up 20 masks for a particular group of people or whatever it was. So I think it's relaxing for her, and it was relaxing for me too. Some when we didn't have, when we could do it just to kind of build up a supply, it was more relaxing than someone's going to be here at 7 o'clock to pick up masks, we gotta get them done, kind of thing. So, but yeah, I think she was not really stressed or anything. She was fine.
Did it feel like a bonding moment or something that you...
Oh, yeah, definitely. But my daughter and I, we've done everything together because I'm a single mom. She's my only child. So, I mean, we've cooked meals together, all, you know. So a lot of the stuff that when she's home, all the stuff we do together is bonding. But yeah, yeah, definitely. And especially because it hadn't been more than maybe a year or two that we had kind of turned our third bedroom into the sewing room and kind of got it exactly how we wanted it, with our thread holders on the wall and our shelf with our fabric and everything. So it was, we had to put dog beds in the sewing room because the dogs would want to hang out with us while we were sewing. So yeah, it was nice to be in the same room, even though we were both doing our own sewing and probably had different things in our ears.
How did you learn about the quilt?
I think someone must have tagged me on Facebook. I didn't know anyone who was involved in it beforehand. Gina and I are still Facebook friends, and I really enjoy that. But I think someone must have heard about it and tagged me and said, hey, you should do this, because they knew I was making the masks.
Yeah. What made you want to be involved
in the quilt?
Yeah.
Oh, I just thought it was a great idea. And it's interesting because I've got all this fabric left over, and I keep saying I'm going to make more quilts, but man, making a quilt is very involved, especially when you're making a very large quilt. And I really appreciated, she created a Facebook group so we could communicate with each other, and I really appreciated kind of learning from the people who are much better sewers than I am, have a lot more experience. So I already forgot what your question was. I guess they wanted somebody from each county, and I just thought it would be really cool to represent Franklin County. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about what you learned from these more experienced sewers?
So one thing, at that point I had kind of made a quilt, but I didn't do a very good job. And then the person who finished it for me fixed the parts that I did. So just them explaining how to put together a quilt square, how you're going to cut a 3x3 square, and then once you piece it together with a 1/4 inch seam on, you know, all the way around, it's only going to be 2.5 inches by 2.5 inches. As a math person, totally got that. And by this point, we'd also upgraded all of our tools in our sewing room. So a nice big cutting mat, nice big ruler, nice rolling cutting utensils. And so, so just like learning how to line things up properly and make sure you're cutting things at the right. If you notice on the quilt, some of them had the black border. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was so nervous when they first showed the quilt. I'm like, please let mine not have a black border. Hopefully I did it right. Not that that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Who do ever do have a black border? But I'm like, hopefully I did it right. Hopefully I didn't cause them extra work mm-hmm. to put my square up there.
Tell me a little bit about your square.
So it literally was scraps from the masks. Part of my process, when you get this fabric, the way I did my mask was I would cut rectangles that were 7x9. So some nights I would spend 2 hours just cutting fabric. And if there's any scraps on the end, put them in my scrap pile. Some of them would be big enough to do something with. Some of them wouldn't be. The ones that aren't big enough to do something with, you can use for stuffing for other projects. So when I first heard about the project, my first step was to go look at my scrap pile and pull out the ones that I thought would look good together. I didn't actually like try to coordinate colors or anything. I just wanted to use, you know, a total of 9 different fabrics for each square, and then just cut them and put them together.
And so there wasn't a, they were just your scraps. You didn't make a significant statement or a.
No, I kind of wanted them just to be my scraps because they were literally from the mask I was making. Like, there's another square on there that was someone else's favorite mask. And so, I mean, I could tell you, like, specifically a few of the squares, people who liked that mask. But mostly I just wanted to make sure it was legitimately scraps from fabrics I use in masks I was making.
And you, when we saw the quilt, you said, oh, that was my favorite. Can you describe that scrap that was your favorite?
That one was one that came from the friend who gave me some from her mother's sewing hoard. So it was probably a fabric from probably the 70s or 80s. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything like it before. But it's mostly green, and it's got just a unique kind of white floral print to it. And I'm just a big fan of green, and you don't see green in fabrics very much. So that was just my favorite one, and probably because there wasn't a ton of it. I probably had a half yard of it. Mm-hmm. So, and that one, I think, when people got to choose, that one went fast. Yeah.
Did you make a mask for yourself out of that fabric?
I think I did early on when, like, they weren't the best quality, so I probably didn't use it very much. I've thought about trying to cut it apart and use it for something else that I can actually use. So,
yeah. How did you share your square?
What do you mean?
To the quilt. How did you send it in? What did you do?
Yeah. So Gina posted on Facebook, mm-hmm. To put it in, you know, an envelope and send it to her. So yeah, that's what I did.
Okay. Did you include anything when you sent the square? Did you write a letter to the governor? Did you include a picture?
No, I didn't. Oh, I sent it. It got put in the mail before she mentioned we should include a picture. So I emailed her a picture of, I think, my daughter and I, and we had taken pictures of the quilt squares to share with friends, you know, online, because mm-hmm. we didn't know, you know, how long it would take or when it might be shared. It could take a really long time, so yeah.
But you didn't write a letter.
I didn't. I'm a math person. I'm not a word person. You don't want me writing words for anything.
Oh, I don't know if that's true, but how did it feel to be involved in this project?
I think I was very appreciative that somebody was putting all that work together and allowed us to be part of it. I thought that was very kind of her and very giving spirit of the people who worked on it. Because I don't know if you've seen what happens on the other side of a quilt, but it is massive work. And this is a large quilt. And she had to have all the equipment. And then you saw the counties around the edges. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just in awe of the work that happened after I did my very simple 2 squares. So, yeah, that was mostly just appreciative and just kind of, you know, in awe of what they were willing to do, all the work they were willing to put in on the other end.
Yeah. How did it feel when you saw it just now?
Oh, yeah. Well, the first time I saw it was on Facebook, of course, mm-hmm. and I was so excited. And, of course, I tried to find the original images so I could zoom in really close to see if I could find my squares. But, yeah, I felt just now seeing it, I was really excited to see it in person. Like I said, for some reason it looks smaller in person than I thought it would be, and I don't know why that is, but maybe I'm remembering my squares seem bigger, but when you piece them together with other quilt pieces, they obviously get smaller because of seam allowances. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was really neat to finally see it. I'm kind of anxious now to be able to bring other people to come see it eventually.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt when it was presented to the governor?
I was definitely excited. It was neat because other people already knew that I was part of it. And so I think other people like tagged me all day on, mm-hmm. you know, Facebook about the post. And I was excited that he shared it. I wasn't sure, you know, it's the middle of COVID, how mm-hmm. important really is a quilt? I know it symbolizes a lot, but you always want to say, well, what's the priority for today? So it was really nice when he gave it airtime, I guess.
Yeah. Did you send anything else to any elected officials? Any, like, a thank you? You said you're not a word person, but yeah. Were there, you know, a card, a thank you, any of the...
I didn't, and it's mostly because, like, I felt like they were probably so busy, I didn't want to take up their time opening something. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't want to add to work that somebody else had to do. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, I will do my job and do it well and let everybody else do what they do.
How have you seen the community continue to support each other, the quilting community or the mask community?
Well, one thing, and I forgot to mention, I knew I was going to forget something. So one thing that's a little bit sewing related is I have been involved in Cinderella's Closet. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of that? Mm-hmm. So I would be considered a little mouse. So this year we were supposed to do that again for the first time since the pandemic started. And then ended up snowing on my day and I didn't get to go. But I was already, like, I purposely bought... a wheeled bag for my sewing machine so I could go for this. So that was, I was looking forward to that. So hopefully I could do that next year. Mm-hmm. But the community, I mean, in Frankfurt, capital cities tend to be a little more progressive. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a countrywide thing. I'm a numbers person, so I know that because of that. And I mean, if I go to Kmart or I don't go to Walmart, but if I go to Big Lots or something, I'm still going to wear a mask. Mm-hmm. Nobody's looked at me mean or said anything. I still don't really eat in restaurants. I don't need to. It doesn't hurt me that I'm not doing it, so I'm just not doing it. It'll be interesting because I'm flying to Boston to see my daughter, and I will 100% be wearing a mask in the plane, in the airport. So I'm really curious to see how that goes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I don't feel like anybody is, I feel like we've gotten to the point where everybody's just kind of allowing everybody else to do what they need to do, what feels right to them, sort of thing.
Yeah. Do you, I'm gonna reframe the question. So the governor introduced this idea of Team Kentucky.
Yeah.
Can you define that in your own terms?
Yeah. So actually, one of my friends who I made masks for, who wanted to pay me, and I told her no. I told her to make a contribution to Team Kentucky, actually. That was one of the ways I thought she could pay it back or pay it forward. Mm-hmm. I think it's just a way to appreciate and be considerate of your fellow Kentuckians. We fall at the bottom in a bad way in so many categories that if we just try a little bit and support each other a little bit and listen to the experts a little bit, we could be so much better at so many things. So that's kind of how I look at it, as just like as a state trying to support each other and do what's best for your neighbor and for your state citizens.
Do you see the quilt working into that idea?
Don't know necessarily. In the beginning, when we were making masks and making the quilt, I mean, there were still a lot of people who were very anti-mask. Mm-hmm. And so they may have looked at the quilt and thought it was stupid. I don't know. What I think of more when I think of the quilt is more of like the legacy of the story of the pandemic and how Kentucky dealt with it. Those of us who were at home, not on the front lines necessarily. Mm-hmm. That's kind of more how I think of it. I don't know. I think people thought it was really interesting and really cool, and they appreciated that this was one of the ways that people who were sitting at home for 4 hours making masks every night after work maybe could get a little bit of recognition or have their work on display on a statewide level. But more what I was always thinking about was legacy. And I was picturing it in this museum and, you know, grandkids seeing it one day, maybe that sort of thing. Because you always look at things in history and wonder what it was like. And I felt like we were kind of in the middle of history.
Yeah. How do you feel today in June of 2022?
About COVID?
About COVID, about...
I am trying to be a little more relaxed about it. I still do mitigation things. I still wear a mask in places. I still, it's funny, at work I don't have to wear a mask, and I'm finally okay with that. And I still wear a mask inside the bathroom, though, because I've learned too much about things that float around the air. Mm. And so I think I will always wear a mask inside public restrooms from now on. I will probably always wear a mask on airplanes from now on, and it's more of I'm understanding the way that the people in Asia have been using masks for years and years and years, and their kind of like their reasoning behind it and how they use it to just prevent all kinds of illnesses. And especially if I have a cold, I would wear a mask anywhere I go to make sure I'm not spreading that. So I think of it, yeah, more in those terms. If I have to be around, you know, in tight quarters for a very long time, I'm going to wear one. But also just, you know, if people, when they had a cold, you know, and also now that we can work from home, sometimes that makes it a little bit easier, but I know that that might not last forever and people might start coming back to work and being sick at work. I feel like it kind of educated me. I learned so much about, you know, aerosols and what people breathe in and out. And so just knowing that there are certain times that I will still wear a mask.
Yeah. This is a little out of order in questioning, but how did it feel to send your daughter back to school?
Oh, it was, well, she ended up doing so she came home in March. She ended up doing the next semester remote. They gave them the option. They had all of their classes where they had cameras. And so she goes to a private school, and I think it's probably a wealthy private school. So what I say is I'm Kentucky middle class, but I'm Boston poor. So she got, she's also very smart. So she got like lots of money to go to school there. And so it's a very fancy school, and they have all the equipment. And they did testing of every student, every faculty member, everybody on that campus every 3 days.
Wow.
They had their own facility, their own testing. And they made an app for it. You could not get into certain buildings if you had not done your testing every 3 days. You couldn't, if you tested positive, they had special dorms for you to go to. So I felt I liked that she stayed home with me through December, through Christmas. And then when she went back, I was okay with it. She was going to have her own room at that point. She wasn't going to be in a shared space. But I appreciated everything her university was doing. They were being very smart. Boston was being very smart. Massachusetts was being very smart. And so I almost felt like she was safer there than she was if she was going to school in Kentucky. Because they weren't being quite as diligent about it as Boston and everything was.
Do you remember when you stopped making masks?
I stopped making masks about 2 months ago.
Oh, wow! Yeah. So in like April of 2022.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, it's funny because I still have my Etsy store, but I put it on break or whatever mm-hmm. you think. And I thought it was on break. And I went like, I kept on saying, when I go 2 weeks with no mask orders, I'll shut it down. Mm-hmm. And then I would go 10 days and I'd get a mask order. Just like randomly people would seal. And I'm like, if they want it, I'm going to make it for them. And I had so many repeat customers, especially I wanted, because they were like, you know, I've gotten masks from all different places. Yours are the ones that work for me. So then you kind of feel like a responsibility to give them the mask that they need, especially because some people reached out and explained exactly, like, they worked in a certain type of place and this is the thing that helped them. So then I thought I had it on vacation mode, and I randomly got another order like in April. So yeah, it's really on vacation mode now. And I don't anticipate, you know, making masks again. I kind of want to, now that I've done Etsy, I kind of want to shift into something else. And so that's what I'm trying to figure out, if I want to do that or not, or just be done.
Yeah. Wow. I'm shocked at the, yeah, like, 2 months ago.
Yeah. Seriously.
Yeah. And so it was mostly Etsy or folks in town. Did you contribute to, like, the First Lady's coverings campaign or any of those?
I reached out to schools and never heard back. Mm-hmm. Like, I had somebody who said, oh, yeah, so-and-so would want some, and then never heard back. I did, let's see, this would have been last fall. I have friends who are teachers, so I found, like, I first reached out to, like, the principals and the vice principals of local schools and didn't hear back. And so then I was reached out to just friends that were teachers. So I did make probably about 40 masks for Elkhorn Middle School, I think. And then there were a couple events in downtown Frankfort, like the march. Mm-hmm. I knew a young lady who was involved in that, and so I gave her, I think, 80 masks for that, because I wanted everybody to wear the masks in the march.
This is the Breonna Taylor march?
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay. And then also later on they did an event that had to do with like gentrification and helping people who are downtown who are getting displaced. They were going to have like a booth set up as resources, and I gave her more masks for that. So that sort of thing. Somebody reached out, I think, about a nursing home, but that never, wouldn't necessarily hear back from people. I'd reach out and then maybe they got a better source. I don't know. Or maybe they got, like, you know, actual medical ones for those more fragile population.
Yeah. This will be our last question. Okay. Do you how would you describe your feelings about being involved in something so large?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like it's been kind of like a gift to me, because, and I'm thinking of this more, are you thinking of this as like the making the mask or the quilt specifically?
Both.
Yeah. So, I mean, even though it kind of gave me a little bit of stress sometimes, it was mostly just very fulfilling for me. I'm a person who wants to be helpful. And, you know, like you mentioned, it was something that my daughter and I could do together. At one point, I would do like two steps of it and she would do the last two steps of it. So we had like a manufacturing thing going on. But also it got me behind the sewing machine more often. Before, it was very seasonal. Just like every once in a while I would start to do that. And that made me more confident to sew. I made my daughter a much nicer quilt after that, after I became a lot more confident in sewing, and just like, I guess, more willing to kind of share my sewing with other people. I will never make a quilt for anybody because it's way too much work. People have said, after they saw the one I made for my daughter, they said, oh, you know, can I buy a quilt from you? I'm like, no, because it would cost you $10 million for how much time and effort I put in. And I'm not worth that because it takes a lot of time and effort. So, but yeah, I just got, it was all positive on my side, yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome, thank you.